Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Roots of the Federal Reserve, Tracing the Nephilim from Noah to the U.S. Dollar by Laura Sanger, PhD, presents a sweeping, alternative history-style argument that modern monetary power is connected to ancient spiritual narratives. Drawing on biblical genealogy, extra-biblical traditions that discuss the Nephilim, and a long arc of post-flood history, the book seeks to connect religious worldview, occult symbolism, and the evolution of banking into a single storyline that culminates in the creation and influence of the U.S. Federal Reserve and the dollar system. Readers can expect a thesis-driven tour through names, lineages, empires, secretive networks, and institutional turning points, with the author positioning finance as more than economics, but as a battleground of authority and allegiance. Whether one approaches it as theological speculation, cultural critique, or a challenge to mainstream accounts of monetary history, the book aims to reframe familiar events as outcomes of deeper, older forces operating behind public narratives. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a spiritual framework for interpreting history and power. A central topic is the book's insistence that history, politics, and finance are best understood through a spiritual lens rather than a purely material one. The author frames major developments as evidence of ongoing conflict between divine order and rebellious, corrupting influences associated with the Nephilim tradition. In this approach, events are not random or merely the result of incentives, technology, and statecraft. They are interpreted as outcomes of allegiance, worship, and the transmission of spiritual authority through people groups, elites, and institutions. This framework leads the reader to reconsider how narratives are constructed and why certain patterns of control recur across centuries. The book's method blends biblical interpretation with claims about hidden continuity, meaning that symbols, rituals, and ideological lineages are treated as indicators of deeper loyalties. Even if a reader does not share the theological assumptions, the topic raises practical questions. What worldview is embedded in an institution? What values do systems reward? And how do moral or metaphysical commitments shape policy? In that sense, the topic functions as an interpretive key that drives every subsequent connection the book attempts to draw between ancient stories and modern money. Secondly, from Noah to nations, genealogies, lineages, and post-flood continuity, another major topic is the long historical bridge the author tries to build from the post-flood world to later civilizations. Using genealogical thinking, the book treats lineages as channels through which knowledge, rebellion, and power can persist. The storyline commonly associated with Noah and the repopulation of the Earth is leveraged to map how particular bloodlines or cultural streams might reappear in later empires. Rather than focusing mainly on archaeology or academic historiography, the book emphasizes narrative continuity, who descended from whom, where groups migrated, and how religious practices and elite structures were transmitted. This approach is designed to make the modern world feel less disconnected from ancient texts, portraying today's institutions as the latest expression of age-old patterns. The reader is invited to see empires and dynasties as not merely political projects, but as vehicles for spiritual agendas. A practical outcome of this topic is that it pushes readers to track ideas through time, how conceptions of sovereignty, priesthood, kingship, and sacred authority may have influenced later governance and eventually economic systems. The book's genealogical emphasis is also part of its persuasive strategy, attempting to create a chain of custody for influence from antiquity to modernity. Thirdly, occult themes, symbolism, and the claim of hidden coordination, the book also spends significant attention on the idea that symbols and esoteric traditions reveal hidden coordination among elites. In this topic, occult motifs are treated not as fringe curiosities, but as functional signals of shared ideology and long-term planning. The author's narrative suggests that certain groups preserve spiritual and political objectives across generations by embedding them in rites, iconography, and coded language, iconography, and coded language. This can include how architecture, emblems, or ceremonial elements are interpreted as communicating allegiance. The broader claim is that public explanations of events are incomplete, and that careful attention to recurring symbols can uncover what the author sees as a deeper storyline. For readers, the value of this topic depends on their standards of evidence. Some will view it as a way to sharpen discernment about propaganda, branding, and the power of ritual and statecraft. Others may see the risk of overinterpretation, where similarities are treated as proof of direct causation. Regardless, the topic encourages a media-literate posture, noticing repetition, questioning why certain images are normalized, and examining how symbolism can cultivate trust, fear, or legitimacy. It also connects directly to the book's thesis that monetary institutions are never neutral, but carry spiritual and ideological messages. Fourthly, banking, centralization, and the road to the Federal Reserve, A core theme is the consolidation of monetary power and how central banking is portrayed as the culmination of a long campaign to control nations through debt and currency. The book treats the Federal Reserve not merely as a technical response to banking instability, but as a pivotal mechanism that enables systemic influence over governments and populations. The narrative typically moves through the rise of modern finance, the growth of credit systems, and the increasing entanglement of state authority with banking interests, emphasizing how the ability to expand or contract money supply can shape wars, elections, and social stability. In the author's framing, these developments are not accidental reforms, but planned steps aligned with deeper spiritual and political goals. Readers are prompted to examine how monetary policy affects everyday life through inflation, purchasing power, and dependency on institutions that most people do not understand. This topic also invites comparison with standard economic explanations that focus on liquidity crises, lender of last resort functions, and regulatory aims. Even for readers who disagree with the book's conclusions, the discussion can serve as a catalyst to learn the basics of how central banks operate and why accountability matters. The book's argument is designed to make monetary structure feel immediate and moral, not abstract and technocratic. Lastly, the US dollar as a global system and a moral question. The fifth major topic is the US dollar's role as more than a domestic currency, functioning as a global system that shapes trade, geopolitics, and personal liberty. The book argues that reserve currency status and the spread of dollar-based finance create leverage that reaches far beyond borders. Within the author's worldview, this leverage is not value neutral. It becomes a mechanism through which spiritual rebellion and coercive power can be exercised at scale. The discussion encourages readers to connect macro issues like deficits, monetary expansion, and international banking with micro realities such as wage erosion, asset bubbles, and family vulnerability. It also frames participation in the monetary system as an ethical challenge, raising questions about debt, stewardship, and what it means to build a life on foundations that may be manipulated. The topic pushes readers to evaluate how money functions as a tool of measurement, exchange, and control, and how global systems can standardize behavior through incentives and penalties. While mainstream accounts attribute dollar dominance to economic size, stability, and institutions, the book emphasizes deeper continuity with older patterns of empire. The result is a provocative invitation to scrutinize assumptions about prosperity and to consider alternative ways of thinking about security, value, and dependence. In conclusion, this book best fits readers who enjoy worldview-driven investigations that blend biblical interpretation, alternative history, and critiques of modern finance. It will especially appeal to Christians interested in spiritual warfare themes, genealogy-based readings of post-flood history, and claims that symbolism and hidden ideology shape institutions. Readers who prefer strictly academic economic history may find the approach unconventional, but even they can use it as a prompt to revisit how central banking works and why monetary design affects daily life. The practical benefit is heightened awareness. By framing money as a system of power, the book encourages readers to ask better questions about debt, inflation, incentives, and accountability. It can motivate deeper study of the Federal Reserve, the creation of money, and the social consequences of currency expansion, while also challenging readers to examine their moral assumptions about security and stewardship. Compared with similar books that focus only on policy or only on theology, this title tries to connect spiritual narrative, elite culture, and monetary history into one continuous argument. That integrated scope is the main reason it may be worth buying. It offers a single, coherent lens that some readers will find clarifying, even when they treat parts of the thesis as hypotheses rather than settled fact. If you would like to support Laura Sanger, PhD, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.